So in order for us to conduct business in this committee, I have to have a certain percentage of the members, over half the members here. Once they're all here, then I would have what's called a quorum. Then I can start my real work. But since I don't have a quorum yet, and you're here to see us, I'd like to find out why you're here. Tell us who you are and why you're at the committee.
Hi, we're 7th grade Girl Scouts from New Brighton, Minnesota.
Yeah. And what brings you to the Capitol today?
We're here to change the law for tobacco to 21.
Oh. Okay. We have scattered applause for that.
Representative Petersburg was clapping.
Well, welcome. This is the Transportation Finance Committee, so we really don't have anything to do. This committee has nothing to do with your issue, but the members here will all be hearing about it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming to the Capitol. Have a safe trip home and do good work.
And just one moment, Mr. Chair.
Yes, that's Bernardi.
So pleased to that you got. Thank you for bringing the students from my district down here.
Really, they're from your district.
Right? Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
I
knew.
Sure.
I knew.
The
right?
Chair is very
just
funny.
Right down the road. Great school, great students, and great teachers there. And they were excited to see that the railroad bridge is up today that's in New Brighton.
Oh.
So keep that safe, and it goes through a park. And so they were excited to see that.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that additional information. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
You have a great day.
Thank you.
All right.
You have a quorum? Are you a comment? You're supposed to
have. It should be their support in the bill that the Patriotic Society's access to schools. That's
coming up. Can I go ahead? I don't have Joe here, so I'm in big trouble.
We have a quorum. I call the meeting of the House Transportation Finance to order for Thursday, March 22nd, 2018. The first bill up is House File 2624. Representative Daniels. He was? There he is. All right. Representative Daniels, I'll move House File 2624 be held over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee, for taking time to hear my bill. It's not very lengthy, so it's not very complicated. We have, in Faribault, we've been blessed to have a lot of growth in our manufacturing and industrial park. We have a company called Metcon, who's a big contractor business whose company is growing all the time. We have Faribault Foods, who have expanded in the last 2 years, going from $135 million expansion onto the plant. And basically, what it means for the roads and for this bill is that they 2 years ago they were running about 50 to 80 trucks per day to Faribault Foods. Now they're running 100 to 120 trucks per day. There's also, in the last couple of years, Aldi Warehouse has moved into the north side of Faribault. So we've got a lot of businesses that are either growing or are coming to the area. We've got Multimill Warehouse on the north side. So what this bill is asking to do is just do a feasibility study to see if it's in good direction to go to have an interchange at County Road 9 and Interstate 35. The roads that they're using right now, most of them have to go south about 3 miles and then cut across by our little truck stop and Hardee's restaurant and then go back onto the interstate. This would cut off, you know, if you're talking all these different companies combined, you're talking about probably 500 trucks a day going south and then across and then back up north. So this would alleviate some of the road problems we've had. Our portal road that takes all this traffic is really coming apart fast. So we're hoping to get this done. We know it's not going to happen this year or next year, but we just want to kind of get it hopefully in the pipeline so in the future we can have more businesses come to the industrial park. There's a lot of land left. A lot of businesses are talking about coming to Faribault, and they're just excited about maybe having another off-ramp so it's easier for them and more efficient for them. And that's really about the extent of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Daniels. Any questions from members? Anyone from the audience that would care to testify for or against this bill? Looks like the department is on its way. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Peterson from MnDOT. Just briefly, you know, I know that these requests for studies come up all the time, and we really empathize with the needs of the local communities and their desire to provide transportation facilities, support their economic development, because we know how important that is everywhere across the state of Minnesota. You know, unfortunately, there are way more good projects to build than there is money to do them. Just listening to the description here and the description in the Senate the other day when a similar bill was heard, it sounds like this is a study that's mostly related to issues that are occurring on the local system. And in my experience, at least the majority of the studies of this nature are funded from local funds, and MnDOT, of course, is happy to participate in that and support it in any way that we can. And then see what happens. And again, I don't know where this project might be on the district's priority list, except it's not even a concept yet, so I'm assuming it's far, far off in the future compared to the other projects that the department sees as priority. So I guess that's all I would say. $500,000, I know, is not a lot of money in the context of the money that we spend on our trunk highway system, but, you know, it's something that we could put to productive use. I'm certain of that.
Thank you. Representative Baker has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess to testify, Scott from MnDOT. If this were approved, I'm just curious, $500,000 seems like a lot of money for this, I know it's an in-depth study. Would this typically just get contracted out through MnDOT, or do you think this would be handled internally with the district office in Representative Daniels' area? How would that get sort of executed and launched?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Baker, it could go one of two ways. We could contract it out. A lot of times, studies of this nature, we do contract out, but if the district has capacity within their district and the staffing there, they could undertake it themselves, depending upon the scope of the study and the number of things that need to be done. Traffic modeling, I see, is listed as one of the things that's one of the things that we typically contract out, because it's a kind of a specialized expertise. You need a pretty sophisticated computer model to do that work.
Any other questions for Representative Mr. Peterson? Anyone else who would care to testify for or against this bill? Your final remarks, Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just appreciate the time to present it, and you know, hopefully this will be a discussion with the next year and the year after we can move the ball forward. And what we'd like to tell our local community is that it's in progress. Hopefully one day we'll have that done and just entice more businesses to move. I haven't been officially told yet, but supposedly there's another manufacturing company coming to our area in that vicinity. So it's nice to see opportunities for growth and opportunities for jobs. So I just appreciate the thought, and hopefully in the next few years we'll have this become reality.
Thank you, Representative Daniels. House File 2624 is laid over for possible inclusion.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Representative Johnson.
Well, thank you, Representative Torkelson. I would just like to take a moment to introduce some guests that I have with me today.
Well, we've already had a set of guests.
Well, these are guests. There's a group of young professionals here from the Mankato area. They're part of Leadership Mankato. And for, 35 years, Mankato has sponsored a Leadership Mankato program, and a lot of us have been through that program. I was in the second year when I was a younger lad, and these folks are here learning about the state legislature as part of their development.
Welcome. Okay, you can go ahead and introduce them. That'd be fine.
Oh,
Welcome to the Transportation Finance Committee. I hope you learn a lot. We'll do our best. Representative Johnson, as long as you're paying attention, would you like to make a motion?
Yeah, I'd like to move the minutes from Tuesday, March 20th.
Representative Johnson has moved approval of the minutes from Tuesday, March 20th. Any comments? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. Minutes are approved. Representative Runbeck, we're going to jump to House File 3346. Representative Runbeck, I'm going to move your bill for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Committee. House File 3346 deals with short line railroads. Minnesota is served by many short line railroads and many, many miles of them. And these railroads lease the trackage and the facilities from Class 1 railroads, such as BNSF. But the problem is when tracks and other things, bridges, fall into disrepair, they aren't able to get loans and able to commit the dollars to put these structures back into place. So I think this is becoming more and more of an issue in our state. But perhaps, I know that Wayne Hall, Mr. Hall from Minnesota Commercial, can tell us more about this particular bridge on Como Avenue that became an emergency situation that had to be replaced. So.
Thank you. Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Wayne Hall. I'm Chief Operating Officer of the Minnesota Commercial Railway. Our company is a small railway with approximately 90 employees. We lease trackage in various parts of the Twin Cities metro area, which includes St. Paul, Minneapolis, New Brighton, Roseville, and other suburbs. One of the lease lines we operate has a bridge over Como Avenue in St. Paul. This bridge was built in 1936 by contract between the state of Minnesota, the city of St. Paul, and the Minnesota Transfer Railway, which was a railway at the time. This particular bridge was found to have significant deficiencies in early 2015. Our railroad made temporary emergency repairs by welding in plates at key points where sections of steel were deficient. It was clear that this bridge needed to be replaced. The cost and design of the new bridge took a few months for bridge engineers and bridge contractors to develop. After reviewing three bids and the proposed designs and final cost was around $360,000. The railway had no options for funding. The railway's lease of the property would not and does not allow liens to be placed on the property, and conventional financing was not available either. Thus, the railway had to apply it to MnDOT's rail loan program, who would not accept the bridge as collateral. So the railway had to pledge two of its newest locomotives and consent to liens required by MnDOT on those locomotives. Total investments by the railroad for this new bridge was around $450,000, but because MnDOT's regulations would not authorize reimbursement for any expenditures incurred prior to the loan approval, the amount of the loan was approved after documentation and emergency repairs were completed in the amount of $352,536. The railway has been making quarterly payments on this loan since January of 2006. The railway made extreme efforts to replace this bridge in the interest of the public and the public safety. Although there is no record of ownership of this bridge, the State of Minnesota Highway Department has a plaque on it identifying the bridge number and the date of 1936, and you'll see that in your handouts. We have several letters of support on this request from the Midway Chamber of Commerce, St. Paul Chamber of Commerce, City of St. Paul, and many of our customers acknowledging that the request for loan forgiveness is reasonable. I want to thank you for your support of this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions from members? Don't see anyone. Anyone else care to testify on this bill? I don't see anyone. Oh, we do have a testifier. please come down to the table, identify yourself for the record, and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Chad Poulos, Executive Director of the Midway Chamber of Commerce. In the Midway neighborhood in St. Paul, we have about 350 members that we represent and have been a chamber since 1919. And the industrials community has always been very important to the Midway community. It's been one of the most important parts of our economy in the Midway the entire time the chamber's been around. It's still important today, and we expect it to be important in the future as well. As Wayne already mentioned, our chamber has been in support of this project. We've been in support since 2015. We remain to be in support. Back in 2015, our board unanimously supported the request of the desired loan forgiveness. We believe the use of the bridge is instrumental to many employers in the Midway area. We appreciate the Minnesota Commercial Railway's willingness to take action on what we feel is much-needed bridge repair. We believe that the requested debt relief is fair and reasonable in light of the benefit of necessary repairs to Midway businesses, the City of St. Paul, and the economy of the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Could you repeat your name?
Yeah, Chad Poulos, K-U-L-A-S.
Thank you, Chad. Any questions from Chad? I don't see any. And this Representative Runbeck, are we looking at the Mercy Fund here?
Mr. Chair, I believe that is the fund.
I'm going to ask Mr. Lee to review the current status of the Mercy Fund.
Mr. Chair and members, in your packets, you should have a fiscal note from MnDOT on House File 3346. This shows a $35,000 a year cost. That's the negation of the debt service payment. So the total loan forgiveness would be, if you look at the second page of the fiscal note, $273,000. And speaking with MnDOT before this hearing, they informed me that the current balance in the Mercy Fund is $1.84
million.
And Mr. Chair?
Thank you
Chair?
Very much for that backup information.
We have an actual update to that, okay? Do you want to share with that?
Sure. Mr. Hall.
They just made their last payment, or their next payment.
We made our next payment on the loan today. So the current open balance that you will have by probably the end of the week is $264,402.25.
State of Minnesota thanks you very much. Representative Mason.
Thank you. This is probably a question for MnDOT, but when I'm looking at this Minnesota Highway Department sign that you provided, and I guess normally I have not noticed signage on other bridges. I don't know whether I just haven't been looking, but if it's a Minnesota Highway Department sign, wouldn't that mean it belongs to MnDOT?
Do we have someone from the department who was here in 1936?
Yes, it
was.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Sure. Is Mr. Chairman Scott Peterson here from MnDOT? And I know that I look like I was around in 1936, but I was very young then. And but no, I as far as I know, the ownership of this bridge is unknown. We have no record of ownership at the Department of Transportation. I'm not familiar with why it would say the Department of Transportation on the bridge. I think that was part of the difficulty that the railroad had in securing a loan from MnDOT and why they had to use their locomotives for collateral is because since there's no owner that wants to claim the bridge and there's no owner yet that has stepped forward to take ownership of it, you know, it's they stepped forward and repaired the bridge on their own since they were using it.
Representative Mason has a follow-up.
Just a follow-up. I mean, it has Minnesota Highway Department and it has a bridge and a number. And there's no records of this?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mason, to my knowledge, no.
Mr. Hall.
Thank you. To answer your question, partly answer your question, we do have another bridge that has an identical stamp on it from the Minnesota Highway Department over I-694, also in New Brighton, and that is state-owned. And Mr. Peterson can confirm that on his own, but I have contracts on file that says that the state of Minnesota built that bridge, and there's an identical plaque on that.
1936 also?
No.
It's not identical.
I have recall it's like 1970s.
It's different. Interesting. Thank you.
That'd be a similar plaque.
Similar.
Yeah, thank you. Any other, anyone else care to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, wrap up, Representative Runbeck.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's a pretty easy to understand issue, and you know, I think it's only the beginning of some of these that are coming to us, as our committee has to ponder how to deal with the infrastructure needs. Thank you.
Thank you. House File 3346 is laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Next, we'll go to House File 3174, Representative Knobloch. Welcome to Transportation Finance, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do have a A1 amendment that I'd appreciate adding on if I could. I can speak to the amendment now, or I can speak to it once the amendment is added on, Mr. Chair, whatever is your pleasure.
We'll add the amendment to get the bill in the shape you like. I will move the A1 amendment to House File 3174. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. Your bill is amended, Mr. Chair. Go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House File 3174, as amended, does two things. First, it allocates $500,000 to do some of the engineering work necessary for expanding I-94 to three lanes from Albertville up to St. Cloud. And secondly, it allocates $20 million of trunk highway funding in 2020 for permanently expanding I-94 to three lanes between Clearwater and Monticello. Now, it would be natural for you to ask, why would we expand I-94 to three lanes from Clearwater to Monticello when it is still at this point only two lanes from Albertville to Monticello? And the reason is that MnDOT has already budgeted in their 2020 work plan a resurfacing of the right lanes of I-94 between Clearwater and Monticello. Because of this, this additional work that is being done then in 2020 and is already in the work plan, the volume of traffic on I-94 is such that they're going to have to add a temporary third lane while they've got the right lane closed in both directions while this work is being done. So it would be very cost effective to take that third lane as a temporary lane and then make it a permanent lane, which my understanding from MnDOT, who I've met with, the District 3 engineers, can be done for a relatively small amount of $20 million. You know, there are well over 10,000 people a day from St. Cloud that commute into the Twin Cities for work. We really do need to have that third lane expanded up to St. Cloud. We've been making progress, thanks to some of you in this committee, on getting that expansion done. We're, this year we are, you know, already, I think, approved to get up to Albertville. This would be one way of very cost-effectively doing a considerable part of the work on I-94 for relatively low cost so that we are moving toward that final goal. So with that, Mr. Chair, members, I'd appreciate your support, and I'd stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson has a question for the Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Knobloch, I appreciate the situation because I know of a similar situation on Highway 14 between Nicollet and New Ulm. It's also scheduled for resurfacing. And what makes that different is that it's currently a two-lane highway. We don't have a four-lane highway, so it's not a matter of going from four lanes to six lanes, but it's going from a very dangerous two-lane highway without separation, et cetera, to a four-lane highway. So if we do this, wouldn't it be compelling to do the other?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I mean, I guess I don't know the details of Highway 14 on that particular project, and you know, if it's in the work plan to make it a four-lane already, and how far along the line it is, and how many miles are being resurfaced, I guess I guess I don't know that particular project, so it's a hard thing for me to express an opinion on.
Representative Johnson, a follow-up.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. As this committee knows, I'd be glad to give you a full description. but I'll pass on that. I think the point I'm trying to make is that earmarking in a situation like this, we all have roads that we would like to be earmarked, and I just, you know, if we're going to choose to earmark roads for convenience to construction and need, et cetera, we can all make a darn good case for that. And so I think for the committee, we have to consider, do we do it for one but not for all? And I think that puts this committee in a difficult situation.
Representative Johnson, you only said Highway 14 once. Mm-hmm. You're slipping.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I could, I guess I should have exercised my ex officio status to hear about Highway 14 more often during this particular legislative session. Maybe I still can. I don't know. But I guess, you know, I don't know that I've ever brought a, you know, a bill like this that I guess, you know, you could be called an earmarking bill. You know, generally speaking, I agree with where you are on saying that, Representative Johnson. But, you know, in this case, I don't have the number in terms of how many tens of millions of dollars it would save to do this, but I think when you're in a situation where MnDOT's already got the money in the work plan and there are substantial amounts of money to be saved by spending just a little bit more to make something permanent that will probably within 10 years be made permanent anyway, it's just good use of taxpayer dollars to do it now. I mean, if we do this now, probably that means your Highway 14 project will be done sooner than it otherwise would be. And I don't know how many other situations there are like this, but you know, it seems to me that MnDOT should be looking at this sort of thing. And if we've got situations where you can save money by spending a little bit more now, that'll be good for the taxpayer and everyone in this committee down the road.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Knobloch pretty much punctuated the point that I was going to make, and that is, as we know, I represent the area, the stretch from St. Michael up to Albertville, and that segment of I-94 needs to be completed on three-lane goal up to St. Cloud. So I'm definitely a partner with you on the long-term endeavor to get three lanes up to St. Cloud. But the point that you punctuated was that which I was going to say, and this committee has been exploring creative ways how we can become more efficient in our roads and bridges transportation spending, how we can be better stewards of the taxpayer dollar. And when there's projects such as the one that you're highlighting here, you know, this is a good example of how we can spend just a little bit more and save the taxpayer quite a bit. And we've had numerous roads and bridges projects, you know, I don't have any off the top of my head right now, but we've had some where we've seen there's been improvements made or bridges taken down and then replaced, but capacity hasn't increased and things like that. But this is a good example of where work is going to be performed, we can make a better, permanent, and more efficient use long-term. So thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And this just highlights the fact that we are underfunding our roads, that we need to get more money into the system. But if we do this project, then what project on the list that MnDOT has is going to get dropped to the bottom? I know in one of my first or second term here, we had a project that they called the Devil's Triangle in my area that got the money taken from that because they needed more money on another project in the metro area, and they were going to drop ours back to the bottom of the list, and then we'd work many years to get up to the list. And so when we start fighting over the scraps that are on the table and not have enough money into it, it makes it difficult for all of us. I remember Representative Earhart, when he chaired this committee, and people would bring projects like this that I want my project done, move mine up, somebody else's. He would always ask, are you willing to support a gas tax increase to put more money in the system? And that's the thing, we need to get more money in the system. And so that's my statement.
Thank you. I won't be asking that question today. Representative Bernardi. Oh, you're not? No question? Oh, well. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Knobloch. You know, when we were developing the Corridors of Commerce program, I remember a day we stopped in St. Cloud, and then we went on our way back to make a stop at St. Michael, and there was fantastic involvement in the local officials in St. Michael and Albertville, and really helped move this Corridors of Commerce program forward. And so I'm very familiar with the issues. They made a really good case for this, and I believe this was funded in the first round. And so I'm wondering if that's being considered, you know, continued application to that program, because this is a corridor of commerce, no doubt about it. Yeah, I think it did score well in terms of getting that first round of funding. So is there consideration of that program for this as well? Because I think it'd be good to go through the established process that MnDOT has for funding corridors like this.
Representative Knobloch.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, the I-94 project, yes, is a high-priority commerce of, corridor of commerce project, but this is a project that's a little bit further out. I mean, the next project that they would be funding would be moving up into Albertville, which I think is planned, and then the next one beyond that from Albertville to Monticello, which wouldn't be this particular stretch of road. You know, I bring this up, and I respect what you're saying, Representative Johnson and Representative Nelson, and, yeah, I mean, if we do this, all dollars staying the same. Yeah, there's someone who is going to be funded in 2020 that's now going to be funded in 2021 instead. But there's also probably someone who is going to have been funded in 2025 that will now be funded in 2024 instead, because we're going to save money in the short term and in the long term be able to do more projects than we'd otherwise do if we put in this temporary lane, then tore it out, and then 5-6 years from now be building a whole new third lane again. And so normally I wouldn't bring this forward, but I do think this is a sort of unique situation where, like I said, I don't think I've ever brought forward an earmarking type project, if you want to term it that way, before. But this is a situation where I think the state can actually save money and be more cost effective and move some people's projects up earlier by doing it as I've suggested.
Representative Johnson.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Knobloch, that your conversation there makes me recall a situation in New Ulm where they're replacing a bridge. And what the district office did was they said, we know that the community at the same time wants to improve the intersection of Highway 15 and 14, which is just one dangerous intersection. I could describe that at length, I won't. But the goal of the community was to do both the bridge and the intersection while that bridge is closed. It made eminently good sense. And so what I think this is a good example of a department working well with citizens and citizens in the local area being adaptive to the current needs. And what they did is they made an arrangement. They scaled back some of that bridge so they could do the intersection at the same time. And that'll be happening this summer. It's going to be a little harder to get into New Ulm this summer, but there's another good entrance, so keep going to New Ulm. My question for you is, has the community where you're at, are you working with your district office to see if there's some give and take like that, where you sacrifice something to make this investment now? Is there some trade-off that would be possible? Has that been explored, as the folks in New Ulm did? And really, it worked out pretty well. Nobody got exactly what they wanted, but we're going to get that dangerous intersection repaired.
Representative
Knobloch. Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson. Well, certainly the people along the corridor, I think there's a lot of support for getting the project done. But no, we haven't had specific discussions about this in St. Cloud. I only became aware of this situation in the last week. And again, of course, I mean, this project actually isn't even getting to St. Cloud. I mean, it's getting up to Clearwater, which is several miles south of St. Cloud, and running from Clearwater to Monticello. None of this project is actually even in my district. But because I think it would be good for my district and be cost-effective for the state, I'm bringing it forward and proposing that we do it.
Is there anyone in the audience who would care to testify for or against this bill? Welcome to the testifiers table. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Peterson from MnDOT. MnDOT recognizes that this is a high-priority outstate corridor. There is a lot of traffic on it, and anyone who drives that corridor to St. Cloud appreciates that fact. The district has been working steadily to try to expand the freeway up to St. Cloud. As it was earlier mentioned, there was a Corridors of Commerce project that took it a little farther west, and there are applications currently being evaluated right now in the Corridors of Commerce program to extend it even farther. And so we're also working on a layout and environmental document that would go from Albertville to Clearwater. So there's progress being made, as has been brought up. If we spend $20 million in 2020 to expand a three-lane segment from Monticello to Clearwater, somebody's projects or some group of projects will be deferred. And even though there might be some cost savings, they won't be anywhere near the $20 million, so there won't be the dollar-for-dollar offset in any case. I was trying to get some notion of what the actual cost savings might be from making this a permanent lane instead of a temporary lane during construction, but I haven't been able to confirm that yet. I'll just point out that when we build a temporary lane to carry traffic temporarily for a short period of time during a construction project, it's much, much different than a permanent lane. We don't build the same kind of base that we do. We build a pavement that's going to last 2 or 3 years instead of 40, 50, or 60 years. And so the cost is dramatically different. The location of the lane could be dramatically different because the temporary lane is going to be designed and placed to support the construction or the resurfacing of the highway, and the permanent lane is going to be placed to support the long-term continuous lanes that will go all the way from Albertville up to St. Cloud. So I think there might be some cost savings, but certainly nothing close to $20 million. So, I'd like to go on record, the department always opposes earmarks because there are so many good projects across the state. Most of the people who support those projects have been waiting in line, patiently working their way through the process, moving their project closer and closer to construction. And this is really only 1 year out now in our planning horizon, because right now we're looking at projects that will be in fiscal year 2019, which starts on July 1st. And so we would respectfully oppose this bill.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Peterson, moving a lane from two lanes to three lanes, then back to two lanes, is there safety concerns on doing that? Because people are going to be merging in and out at 70 miles an hour, and in rush hour traffic, I know that stretch of highway is fairly well traveled. Are we looking at safety concerns if we do what the offer the bill wants to do?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, I'm not a safety expert, but I do know that one of our investment priorities when we have the opportunity to do that is to fill those two-lane gaps when we have four-lane on either side of a two-lane stretch. So, I know that's one of the certainly one of the arguments that the proponents of investments in 14 bring forward when they talk about that, because we have some there, we have some on Highway 23, we have some in a few other areas around the state as well.
Representative Petersburg.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm glad you mentioned that before Representative Johnson and I could mention Highway 14 as being one of those earmarks. But the question I think really gets to be is, here we are, we're going to create this temporary lane. There is a certain amount of construction that's there. And if we go through and then dismantle it again, that whole cost is something that in this particular case could be used for then this new construction of a permanent lane. And so there is at least that cost benefit to it. And so it'd be kind of nice to know what that might be. So as you go forward, if you have some information about what that might be in savings, we'd sure be appreciative of that.
Well, I didn't have a question, but I do. I'll ask one. I will tell you what
was Sarah.
Highway
23. Highway 23. We've got to get that out there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Nelson's point to his question, so on the eastbound side of I-94, coming from St. Michael into Rogers and then down to Maple Grove, it does just that. Goes from three lanes to two lanes, back to three. And it's very frustrating. But I haven't seen any. I have not heard anything about a safety issue. But it is indeed frustrating. But to your point regarding safety, I think that the savings in dollars is definitely something that makes it a worthwhile consideration. Thank you.
Final remarks, Representative Knobloch.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would just say in regard to the safety issue, I mean, the other side of it is that if we're going to do construction and add a temporary third lane and have that third lane be used for a number of months, then go back to two lanes and then do it again, there's a certain amount of safety consideration in doing it twice as opposed to just doing it once the first time. And, you know, members, I don't know how much money we save, but clearly it's going to be several million dollars to build a third lane going both directions for 14 miles and then deconstruct that third lane that goes both directions for 14 miles. I mean, clearly there's a significant amount of money involved in there. Yes, it's not as much as if we made it permanent. If we made it permanent, it's $20 million more. And certainly that's a significant amount of money. I realize that, yes, some projects get bumped back 1 year, but I think that this saves the state money in the long run. You know, 6-7 years from now, there are people that are getting their projects done earlier because of the money we saved here. And if the Department of Transportation isn't looking at situations like that, wherever they might be, in whichever one of your districts they might be, they should be looking at that, where we can spend a little bit more money now if they're going to be spending money anyway, and saving money so that projects down the road get done more quickly. So with that, Mr. Chair, members, I appreciate your consideration of this. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Knobloch. House File 3174 is laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Bernardi. House File 3866. There's a... I suppose I should wait till she gets in. Representative Bernardi, I'm going to move House File 3866 for possible inclusion. I see you have an A1 amendment. I'm going to move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, they signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed by the same sign. Representative Bernardi, your bill is amended to your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill today, and so it's been moved. You moved it all. It's already in order. Correct? Okay, thank you. So this bill today is for a railroad bridge in the community of New Brighton. It needs to be replaced for safety, and I have a commercial railroad, Minnesota Commercial, here with me today, as well as the Public Works Director in New Brighton, and he probably has a different title. But they'll go into it, but what we did is we got all the stakeholders together in the community. There's a lot of businesses that said how important this is for their businesses, and then also the communities of New Brighton and Ramsey County to work together and come up with the best plan moving forward so it will be sustainable in the future and serve the needs of businesses and the community. So with that, Rob Boggess from Minnesota Commercial will talk, and then Craig Schlickening from the City of New Brighton.
Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Robert Boggess. I am the Chief Maintenance Away Officer for the Minnesota Commercial Railway. Our railway operates a line between New Brighton and Fridley on the Northwest Metro. This line has been in place since the 1880s. On this segment, there is a bridge over the Rice Creek. This bridge was originally built in 1926 and substantially rebuilt in 1966. The first problems encountered with this bridge occurred around 2005. When the bridge was rebuilt, the railway replaced the pile drove new steel piers and replaced riprap on the embankments to keep them from washing away. Then in the spring of 2017, an annual bridge inspection by an outside professional engineering firm found more of the same conditions existed as in 2005. Emergency repairs were recommended and completed at railroad expense, including replacing damaged beams and riprap on the embankments, which had washed out again due to the increased water flows. The engineering report subsequently confirmed by another outside professional engineering firm recommended replacement of the bridge as soon as possible, as the repairs would only be temporary and a major water event could result in the failure of this bridge. This bridge is a vital It is vital for our service to four industries and nine other associated businesses dependent on those industries. The total number of jobs impacted by 1,100 rail cars that go over this bridge annually is approximately 1,500. Loss of this service to these industries would have a negative impact on the economy for the state of Minnesota. The volume over this segment is about 2% of the railroad's annual carloads, and there is no economic return or justification to allow the railroad to expend over $1 million needed to repair this bridge or replace this bridge. The Race Creek Watershed District recognizes the economic and public safety benefits of the replacement of this bridge, and the Race Creek Watershed District supports Minnesota Commercial's proposed clearspan bridge. We also have letters from support of other industries in the area, and we would appreciate the support for your bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, my name is Craig Schlichting. I'm the Director of Community Assets and Development in New Brighton. The bridge does serve a primary function of rail. It serves secondary functions of recreation and flood protection. It spans Rice Creek. It's fully located within New Brighton and a regional Ramsey County Park. If the bridge were to fail, it would certainly threaten public safety and have some flooding concerns. We have collaborated with Ramsey County Parks, Rice Creek Watershed District, and the rail. And with that, we offer our support from New Brighton for its full replacement. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to ask Mr. Lee to address the fiscal note.
Mr. Chair and members, in your packets, you should have a fiscal note for House File 3866. The fiscal note notes that the total cost for the biennium is 1.552, and right now the fiscal note shows that as coming out of the general fund, but the amendment that was adopted would have that coming out of the Mercy account. So, again, the reminder, the Mercy account currently has a $1.84 million balance. So if both this bill were enacted and the bill that we heard previously from the Mercy account, there would be about a $15,000 balance.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Any questions for the testifiers or for the author? Anyone else care to testify for or against this bill? Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
My name is Tom Snell. I'm the executive director of the 400-plus member White Bear Area Chamber of Commerce. And even though this bridge goes over to serve businesses in Fridley, this is a big issue for us because we have several large employers in the White Bear area that have distribution centers in Fridley that rely on getting their products to service. So if something were to happen to this bridge, it could negatively impact our businesses in White Bear Lake. So this is a project that we dramatically support, unanimously endorse, and we would urge this committee to support funding this vital project for our area. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions from members? I do not see any. Final remarks, Representative Bernardi.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to bring this important bill forward. I want to thank all the parties involved in coming up with a really good plan, and Mr. Marvel for helping us find a good funding source for it. And I would like to move my motion again to, that's what you want me to do, right?
We're laying this over for possible inclusion.
For possible inclusion in the transportation finance omnibus bill.
So 3866, as amended, okay. Is laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you. You do that well.
Representative Petersburg has a question for Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bernardi, Sometime, if you have a chance, do we know who actually owns this bridge and the track and what the lease arrangement is? And if we're waiting for the next bill, that's fine. You can get to me later. That's
okay.
Fine.
We do have someone here who can, Wayne, right up there with Minnesota Commercial, who can answer that. It is, I've gotten different answers on that they have owned it. It's not certain who owns it, and so I will let Wayne Hall from Minnesota Commercial explain that briefly.
And Mr. Chair, you can move forward if you want. We can get that later.
I can give you a minute, Mr. Hall.
Okay, again, my name is Wayne Hall with Minnesota Commercial. The railway bridge, we believe, is owned by the landlord. Again, we lease this property. Again, there are no titles to the bridge since it was built in the 1880s, or the line was originally built in the 1880s. There's no documentation of ownership. Again, the leasing company would own it.
So, Mr. Hall, if this bill would go forward and we would spend state money on this bridge, who would own the bridge after repair?
It would revert, I believe it's in the bill, it would go to a company called MT Properties, or they're the landowner of the property.
Thank you for that information.
Welcome
to committee, Chair Loon.
Oh, did you have a follow-up, President Peter?
Thank you. Welcome to committee, Chair Loon. We have House File 3776 before us. And
so, reading this one? This one, she wants to get it to tax.
The motion is to move House File 3776 to the Tax Committee. Is that your understanding, Representative Loon?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Do we have an amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. There is an A1 amendment that was pre-filed with your committee.
Thank you. Let's take care of that first. I'll move the A1 amendment to House File 3776 to get the bill in the shape the author would like. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. Thank you, Representative Loon. Your bill is amended.
All right. And, Mr. Chair, if you are amenable, I would have a small oral amendment as well.
Will you describe that for us, and we'll see if we're amenable or not.
All right. Fair enough. The bill has to do with the fiscal disparities program and creating a funding stream for bonding for projects that reduce congestion in the metro area. The fiscal disparities program involves communities in the 7-county metro area, and it was the intention of the bill to have these projects also done in that area. But in referencing the metro district that MnDOT has, they are not exactly the same. There's an additional county that MnDOT has. So what I would propose to do is on line 3, or page 3, line 28, change the reference so it is not the Department of Transportation Metropolitan District, but it would be deleting Department of from line 28 and line in page 3. And insert area specified in section 473F.02, subdivision 2, which again references the counties in the fiscal disparities program, and then delete line 29 from page 3 so that the programs are lined up.
Thank you. I'm going to ask Mr. Burris to repeat the motion.
Mr. Chair, members, so the oral amendment would be page 3, line 28, delete department of, and insert area specified in section 473F.02, subdivision 2, and then page 3, delete line 29.
And Mr. Burris, can you tell us what 473.02, subdivision 2, refers to?
Mr. Chair and members, that is a definition within the fiscal disparities chapter. The term is area used in that chapter. That would narrow the territory of where projects would occur down to the 7-county metro, with the exception of one city. So it would align with the territory, geographic territory of the fiscal disparities program.
Members, are there any questions regarding this amendment? Representative Hoffman.
Mr. Chair, what would be the city? Not sounds like only one city not included.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, the city of Northfield is excluded. So, And actually, under current law, airport property is excluded as well. That's being proposed to be changed in the bill in another spot. So you can actually see it occurs to me, the definition language in the bill. It's on page 6, section 1, so starting at 6.17.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. Any other questions for Mr. Burris regarding this potential oral amendment? Do any committee members have an objection to amending this bill orally? I see none. I will move the oral amendment as described by Representative Loon and Mr. Burris to House File 3776. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. Your bill is amended again, Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the committee allowing me to do that. I just realized today that Chisago County is part of the Metro District, and they're not part of fiscal disparities, and that's one of the differences. So, with that,
to your bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. This is an idea that I've thought about for quite a while, and it is out of the box. It is rather bold. I understand that there are elements to this that may be controversial. But as a resident of the metro area, a representative of the metro area, which some of you are as well, I know that we are a great place to live and to work, and we have more people flocking to the metro area all the time. I noted today very aptly the Star Tribune having a front page article about the number of people moving into our area, 250,000 more residents since 2010, and that's estimated to grow. And at the same time, I know from following sort of our regional planning on our transportation system that we have a problem with enough revenues to address expanding our system. And congestion on our roadways is a significant issue. You know, the Thrive Minnesota plan of 2040, you know, understands that there just aren't enough resources right now to be able to fulfill a larger vision of how we're going to get people where they need to go. And in meeting with MnDOT and exploring projects on the books in our area, the focus really is on preservation. And while as part of the driving public, we endure the preservation projects, at the end of the day, there's no additional capacity as part of those projects. An example of that in my area of Highway 169, a busy area of that roadway was shut down for a year to replace a bridge, but at the end of that rather painful process, it's a lovely bridge, but there's no additional lanes or additional capacity there. So I've been thinking about how we could find another stream of revenue and preferably without looking to a new tax or something of that nature to help augment what we're doing currently in our transportation system and really target projects that would add to capacity, would add to or help to us to increase mobility on our roadways when projects are being done by MnDOT to maybe with preservation. So could we have another stream of revenue to help partner with that? So I've also done work as part of my years in the legislature looking at the fiscal disparities program. And I know that's more of a topic for the tax committee, but just in order to describe the bill more thoroughly to you on what it does, this is a property tax redistribution program. It involves commercial and industrial properties. It's been around since, I think, 1972. Has never been amended or changed since that time. The tax revenues that flow into that program and are redistributed in the metro area now are upwards of $630 million. And it's quite a significant sum of money. And again, the monies are collected into a pool and moved around. But I thought if there would be a purpose that the metro area, which is paying into this, could agree. It's a common purpose, one that all communities could see benefit from. Perhaps it would be an acceptable use of taking some of the monies from that pool every year and, again, using it as a revenue source for bonding to do some of these congestion relief projects. So my proposal would basically structure a corridors of commerce program similar to the one that is in existence today, but for the metro area, that specific seven-county metro area that's within the fiscal disparities program now, but add a criteria to that of prioritizing projects that focus on congestion relief and increasing mobility. So it would allow $15 million a year to come from that fiscal disparities pool, and it would fund developments to increase capacity in our trunk highways, again, in the metro area. It would not be used for transit or for MinPass lanes, and because there are other sources of revenue for transit currently. And again, the idea would be to try to help improve roadways, intersection, those kind of things. It would be managed by MnDOT, and they would consult with local governments in this affected area in their selection of projects and determining prioritization of projects. And just a little bit on the fiscal disparities program, do you want me to describe those changes, Mr. Chair, or let that be a topic for Tax Committee?
I think we probably should continue and describe those to get a good understanding of what's happening in this bill, Representative Lone.
All right. Very good. So my reforms to the fiscal disparities program, again, this has been around for a long time, has not been changed. I did author a bill back in, I think it was 2010, to have a study done of the program. So there was a study that was produced by a titular research firm in that. You know, there's a number of ways to look at this, but a couple of things have troubled me about the program over the years. One is that when the program was created, CI properties, the 1971 base, so this program was authorized in 1972, the valuations from up to 71 were eliminated from the base calculations. So communities that were more developed with their CI properties at that time did not have that valuation going into the pool. It was only largely for those properties developed after that time. So more of the commercial properties in the cities in the center core, urban core, and first ring suburbs had more of their property valuations that did not go into this pool were staying in those communities' tax base. But communities like mine that developed largely after that period of time, all of our CI properties are in that. So I would propose to eliminate that 1971 base value subtraction. So if we're going to have the program, all the property valuations go into the pool. But I would also reduce the contribution percentage. It was set at 40%. I would reduce it to 37% for all of the properties. And if you look at the calculations on how that impacts what's going into the pool and then coming back out, it's almost a dollar for dollar switch. So it doesn't really increase the size of the pool by making those two changes at the same time. CI properties at the airport were exempted from the program when it was created. I've gone back to try to talk to nonpartisan staff who was here at the time. We can't necessarily determine exactly why that happened. I know some folks at the airport may want to talk up to me about this, and I'm happy to do that. But again, with the idea of being all CI properties in the metro area being in the program, I thought that was fair, so I'm bringing them into the program as well. And then lastly, the change I would propose is that, you know, the program only looks at the average of commercial and industrial properties in the metro area, and then you get a distribution back to your city or your community based on what your community has for CI property tax base. It does not take into consideration your residential property values. And we do have communities that have higher than average per capita residential property values, getting quite a bit of money back from the pool. And it really led me to consider whether or not those cities should be receiving those funds when they may be coming from a district that has, or a city that has, a lot of commercial and industrial properties, but has a relatively poor or lower valued residential tax base. And so what I would do is propose that on a sliding scale, if you are receiving, if your city has more than 100% to 120% above average residential property tax value, that your receipts from the fiscal disparities pool would be adjusted downward. And you would still get addition up to, if you're up to 120% of above the average value of residential property tax capacity, and you would always get at least 100% of what you paid into the pool, which you would no longer receive those additional monies that you had received beyond that. So that, in a nutshell, is some of the changes to the fiscal disparities program that partner with this idea of taking some money out of the pool to use for metro area highway projects and congestion relief, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bloom. What's the size of the pool? How many dollars are involved here?
All right, so there's two ways to talk about it. One is sort of the tax capacity, and the other is the amount of money that's redistributed, and that's the latter is how I prefer to think about it if nonpartisan wants to chime in, but it's about $631 million a year at this point.
We'll just stop with that. Members, we have a number of testifiers. It's my intention to go through the testifiers first and then go to questions because we are at risk of running out of time, and I want to make sure folks who want to testify have a chance to do that. So we start with Pat Mulqueeney, President of the Eden Prairie Chamber. After Pat, next up is Brad Aho from the Eden Prairie City Council. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Yes, thank you. My name is Pat Mulqueeney. I serve as the president of the Eden Prairie Chamber of Commerce. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members, for giving me the opportunity to talk about this bill. The Eden Prairie Chamber, we represent 400 area businesses that employ over 32,000 area employees. Metropolitan transportation is obviously a critical component of their success. But in addition to that, we look at the dollars spent by our businesses in terms of the fiscal disparities tax collected. Our businesses have traditionally been net contributors to the program, meaning we lose more dollars than are brought back in. If you take a look at the last number of years, that can average anywhere from $10 to $11 million. This program or this change would allocate dollars to what we would see as a much higher priority, meaning metropolitan transportation projects that would help move people to and from work, goods and products and services throughout the Twin Cities area. It truly would be a representation of regional investments in a area of high need, and we would strongly encourage support of this bill.
Thank you very much. Brad Aho is next, followed by Patricia Nauman. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Brad Aho. I serve on the Eden Prairie City Council, and also I serve on the 484 Corridor Commission, and I've appeared before your committees numerous times talking about transportation issues. Transportation issues are really near and dear to my heart, and this bill really does a lot to address a very, very high need. We look at Eden Prairie, and as Pat Mulqueeney has stated, and as Representative Lewin has stated, Eden Prairie is a net contributor, and that is about a net contributor of about $10 to $11 million annually. So one of the things I think that this bill really accomplishes is that MnDOT does not have enough money allocated to congestion relief and mobility projects. And with all of the, almost all of their money going to just maintenance of roads and bridges, we really need more money allocated to mobility projects. For example, I have spoken to you in the past about the I-494-35W interchange. That project is something that this project or this bill could address in a way that would really improve transportation, not only for Eden Prairie residents, but all residents in the metro area and beyond. And so having a project like this or a bill like this that would score the projects in a fair and equal manner throughout the metro would be a great way to evaluate projects and assure that we can get some mobility improvements to our city to keep our not only our city and our region, but our state competitive. Because as we all know, transportation is so key to keeping a competitive a region. And so I thank Representative Loon for putting this bill forward, and I truly hope that you will give it some consideration and that you will forward, because it is very much needed. So thank you for the ability and the time to present to you.
Thank you very much. Patricia Nomad is next, followed by Rob Vanosik. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Patricia Nauman. I'm representing Metro Cities. Metro Cities represents cities in the 7-county metropolitan area, and I am here. I'll just be very brief today. Metro Cities does very much appreciate some of the issues that Representative Loon is trying to address in her bill with respect to transportation needs. The organization does strongly support resources for transportation. However, our policies on fiscal disparities, and we have taken a close look at this program, we do monitor it closely, do oppose diverting from the fiscal disparities pool essentially for any purpose. So not this one in particular, but any specific objectives or programs. Metro City's policies on the fiscal disparities program also stipulate that if there are to be modifications made to this program, that they should really be done only within the context of a larger property tax reform discussion. So again, while we do appreciate the concerns that Representative Loon is trying to address in this bill, and I do want to acknowledge the previous testifier, we certainly support fair and equal treatment of the metropolitan area in the corridors of commerce and other programs as well. But our policies just generally oppose having diversions from the fiscal disparities pool. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up, we have Rob Vanosik, followed by Todd Hurley from the City of St. Paul. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rob Vanosik on behalf of the 35W Solutions Alliance, and we appreciate the opportunity to support the creation of a component of the Corridors of Commerce program focused on reducing congestion and improving mobility in the metropolitan area as found in Article 1 of House File 3776. We do not have a position on Article 2, but of course strongly support the funding that this committee has led through the Corridors of Commerce program in the past. The Solutions Alliance supports the funding, building, operating, and maintaining a robust multimodal transportation system along the 35W corridor, the state's busiest. And its feeder routes between Elko New Market and downtown Minneapolis that reduces congestion, improves safety, and enables economic competitiveness. No corridor in the state has a worse bottleneck for commerce or freight than the intersection of than found on 35W at the intersection of 494. Without significant funding via a program like Corridors of Commerce or something found in this bill, the 18th worst bottleneck in the nation will not likely see improvement in the near or distant future, as only 42% of MnDOT funds go to the metro and that percentage is expected to drop considerably. Despite the metro having well over 50% of the state's population in 2015, and though the 94% of the state's net population growth between 2015 and 2040 will be in the metro district, there's Twin City mobility needs in the next 20 years totaling $4.3 plus billion, and there is just not enough funds. Mr. Chair, with that, want to just say projects like the interchange you've heard about affect folks not just in the metro region, but all over the state and those in other states as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Next, I have Todd Hurley. Well, I want to get through the testifiers, and then we'll come back. We'll call them back if we need them. Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Todd Hurley, and I'm the finance director for the City of St. Paul. I'll just keep my comments very brief. In modeling the proposed bill, the City of St. Paul would actually incur significant property tax issues, and the model determines that the taxpayers in St. Paul would be hit by about $9 million in property taxes, and as you relate that to the city levy, that's nearly 10% of what the city levies on its taxpayers, so we'd be looking at another $9 million on top of that. And with that, I can conclude my testimony.
Thank you very much for that information. Mr. Peterson, please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Peterson from the Department of Transportation. I appreciate Representative Loon's attempt to provide more funding for transportation. We don't really have a position on the funding mechanism or the program. Certainly, if the bill moves forward, we're happy to work with her on some of those details if the opportunity arises. But what I'd like to do is address very narrowly a provision in the legislation that has to do with the MinPass lanes. Currently, the way I read it, the program, the funding from the program would not be able to be used to fund the investment in our MinPass system. And I would just like to briefly explain why that is problematic for us. Congestion is a problem in the metro area, there's no doubt, but it helps to kind of break down in a little bit to look at it in a little more detail. Congestion is really only there during the peak periods, which the peak periods vary from corridor to corridor, but largely they're one directional for, let's say, roughly 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Then consider only about half of congestion is recurring, which means it's based upon the amount of capacity that exists in the roadway and the volume of traffic. But the other half is related to incidents, crashes and snow, that additional, crashes and snow that really are not able to be addressed by additional capacity. So if you add capacity or additional lanes in our congested corridors, they're really only needed for that additional capacity about 10% of the time. And that's certainly it's a crucial 10% of the time, and it's a source of many headaches and bottlenecks and stuff. But 10% of the time to only address half the problem that we see on our freeway system. And the reason that MinPass lanes are so important is because they really do work. They allow us to carry twice the volume of people in some locations for the price of one lane. Theory and the practice behind that is based in economics. You see it in business practices all over in our economy. Hotels, airlines in particular have peak period pricing. We used to have with long distance calls when there used to be a charge for long distance. This is traffic management strategy that's endorsed by the Reason Foundation and the Center for the American Experiment. And the adoption of priced lanes continues to expand in metro areas across the world because it works. And so in every location that we have built, where we plan to build MinPass lanes, it is significantly more cost effective in reducing congestion because basically you get your mobility at half the price. And so and the one thing that it does do that you can't get with any amount of investment in general purpose lanes is it gives you, in almost all cases, a reliable trip time. If you're willing to pay the fee to use the impasse lane, you can almost guarantee what your travel time will be, which is something that is not really characteristic of our general purpose lanes. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else care to testify to this bill? I do not see any other testifiers. We'll move on to member questions. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank Chair Loon for another innovative idea, trying to be creative in some of the addressing some of the needs, you know, in regards to our transportation here in Minnesota, and specifically to the area of which this addresses. My question, I'm not sure if it'd be for the bill author or maybe research, but to what degree it appears that this is going into the Quarters of Commerce section of law. So what impact, if any, does this have with existing Quarters of Commerce selection, commingling of funds, et cetera, et cetera? And then specifically, I would address your attention to 3.23. At the very end of that line, starting with the word the, it says the commissioner may implement the congestion management program component with any funds used for the Quarters of Commerce program. So the question becomes, are we commingling funds now, and does the creation of this program interfere in any degree with existing Quarters of Commerce?
Would you care to address that, Representative Loon, or should we pass it to staff?
Well, just to briefly comment, I'll let nonpartisan comment as well, so to get the more specifics. But the goal of the program, and stated in there as well, is that this is to be additional funding, so it is not to supplant other sources of funds that would come affecting the metro area, whether it be from Quarters of Commerce as it currently exists or other sources. So it is specifically to be an additional revenue stream, so it wouldn't be, you know, then freeing up money that would then go outside of the metro. But I'll let Mr. Burris comment to that.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. Are we supplanting here? One of my favorite terms, you know.
Mr. Chair, members, I might get at that through a different explanation rather than going down that path, if I might. So, Mr. Chair and members, I think there is a pretty clear, in my reading, separation of the fiscal disparities dollars. Those would be directed into a new account that's created. That account has a statutory appropriation, but specifically for the new congestion management component in the program. There are a couple of provisions. Representative Lucero pointed out one. I'll first note a couple of others. One is on 3.10 to 3.12, and that is a restriction when MnDOT, in implementing the general Corridors of Commerce program, would need to create a separation and not look at the funding stream going specifically into the metropolitan congestion management component, so that the general Quarters of Commerce program, as I read this, would be treated separately. There is a second provision that's somewhat along the same lines. You'll find on 4.14 to 4.17 that also kind of maintains or seeks to maintain a distinction in the new funding stream for the congestion management component being treated separately as well. This would be a restriction on MnDOT reducing the amount of funding to the metro area district as a result of this new program component, or reducing the amount that would go to the metro area under the general Quarters of Commerce program. So that would seem to set up some degree of firewall. That last piece, then, that was noted on 3.23 to 3.25, MnDOT might have further comment on this. I would read this as giving some flexibility to the department to, of the general Quarters of Commerce dollars that are made available, to utilize the selection criteria adjustments that are in the congestion management component, rather than using the criteria that are established in current law for the kind of general Quarters of Commerce program. So in other words, of the dollars that are going to the metro for Quarters of Commerce in the general program, I would read this, that MnDOT could focus on kind of more specifically on congestion management as opposed to some of the freight components, freight movement or freight elements that are in the criteria for the General Quarters of Commerce Program.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. A follow-up, Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that explanation. And to the bill author, to be clear, I appreciate your being creative and trying to think of innovative and how we might be able to use these funds. It would just be my hope to the bill author and the committee that unless there might be a very good explanation why this program was written into Quarters of Commerce, probably maybe a very good explanation, but if consideration could be made, taking this program, the criteria, the ideas, and just create a separate section within statute rather than creating that quasi-blurring with the Quarters of Commerce program. Thank you.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, excuse me, I can't get my hands around how many dollars are being spun off of fiscal disparities and put into the pool. I hear 50 and I read 24, and so can you describe that better?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will try, and I think nonpartisan tax staff, if Mr. Hines is here, he may be able to describe it as well. Again, it has to do with the tax capacity or the tax base of the program and then what that translates to in actual dollars that come out. So the actual dollars that would come out of the pool is $50 million each annually.
Okay. Mr. Chair and Representative Loon, then how many dollars would be distributed through the management congestion management pool?
Representative Loon.
Well, in meeting with nonpartisan staff on bonding and how that would work. So if you had $50 million a year to be used as a stream of revenue to pay bonds that were let for this program, and it's my understanding the bonds generally are 20 years, accounting for interest, it would be a little bit less than $500 million over 20 years. I think I have that correct.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Moon, so can you, what's that annually? That's 10?
It would depend, obviously on how the bonds are let, for projects that are approved and that, and that it would be up to $50 million from the pool to be that stream of revenue for paying the bonds. And so I guess if you developed a list of programs and you let out bonds for, the entire capacity, I guess you could be, it'd be somewhat less because you have to account for the interest payments and that as part of what you're paying, but, in round numbers, about $500 million.
Okay. Mr. Chair, is pretty substantial. I believe we spend annually on our metro highways $400 million, which is a combination of corridors of commerce and the gas tax distribution. But $400 million is all we spend in the whole entire metro highway freeway system. So what you're proposing is significant and interesting. Thank you.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question if I understood Mr. Banasik. He said they supported Article 1, but they weren't taking a position on Article 2, and unless I misunderstood it, which suggests they were supporting doing something about congestion, but not how to pay for it. And, of course, that is always the dilemma, isn't it, that we all understand the problem of congestion, the cost of congestion. The big disagreement is on how we pay for it. And just to underscore Mr. Hurley's testimony, my understanding is that the simulation of the impacts on individual cities was done and that St. Paul receives the worst hit, and that based on their numbers, the city of St. Paul would experience a more than $9 million revenue loss under this bill. So even though we're thinking we're solving a problem by not raising taxes, in fact, we're raising taxes on some cities in order that everyone's congestion problems can be solved. And I don't know if Mr. Hurley is still in the room, but I'm assuming that $9 million is every year. That repeats every year.
I see a nod, Representative Hausman, so I'd interpret that as a yes.
And then, Mr. Chair, if I could, the other hat we wear, would this count against debt service guidelines?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, this would authorize an additional, if at the maximum borrowing level, assuming a leverage of approximately 10 to 1, an additional $500 million in trunk highway bonds at one time, or up to. As I understand it, the debt service guidelines are focused around general fund impact, but also total principal. I would have to do some double checking and get back to the committee on that. So,
thank you. Representative Gazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions. Thank you, Representative Loon, for the bill. I'm wondering, we have this culture of borrowing and spending here in Minnesota, but actually this $50 million could be used in cash as well. Have you considered that approach rather than additional debt?
Representative Loon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gazkowski, yes, and I'd be open to that. I guess the thought would be, if you had a large project, say 494-35W, and you wanted to actually decide you're going to move forward with that project, this would be a stream of revenue where you have, doing the bonding approach, you would have a stream of revenue for actually moving forward and accomplishing that, which is, it's a sizable, more expensive project. But, with $50 million cash each year, you could do, projects obviously up to that amount that may be helpful, but knowing that some of these projects could be expensive, my thought was the bonding approach might make it more useful in congestion relief.
A follow-up, Representative Gazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Loon. Of course, we could save for a couple of years, too, and accumulate $100 million or $150 million for larger projects as well. But I had a question for Mr. Hurley, and he seemed to suggest that this approach would mean that the City of St. Paul would have to raise taxes to accommodate the budget situation in the City of St. Paul. Mr. Hurley, did you ever think about decreasing the size of spending in the city? 10%. Would that be an option?
10%.
Mr. Hurley, if you'd like to address the question, please step forward. Go ahead with your answer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drakowski, what my statement was actually is that it would be a $9 million cost to taxpayers in the City of St. Paul. With the fiscal disparities pool, it's an offset to what your levy is. So it's a cost. So it's an increase in taxes that would be paid by the taxpayers in St. Paul. And then on the second point, during every budget session for the City of St. Paul, All costs and all revenues are put on the table, but it's also important in the City of St. Paul to maintain service levels that our citizens expect.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, I have Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I actually have a question for the bill author and Mr. Milquini. If you come down, that'd be great. I hear a project 494-35W being mentioned a lot, which is near and dear to my heart. So I have a question. This bill is drafted just for roads and bridges. Had you at any point given thought to including transit in it?
Representative Loon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenthal, I had, and that has been suggested to me by some folks, but knowing that with CTIB's dissolution and the sales tax just being increased in both Hennepin and Ramsey, and basically those funds being dedicated towards transit, my thought was we needed a dedicated source of revenue to also try to address congestion on roadways.
Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. McQueen, thank you. It's an interesting approach, but do you still support transit projects that go through Eden Prairie?
We do. We do still support Southwest LRT based on the feedback from our business community. The issue is the movement of individuals, and mainly workers, in being able to attract employees. That's a component of successful business, obviously, as is moving products and other vehicles throughout our metro area. I think to piggyback on what Representative Loon said, we also are strong supporters of the 35W 494 interchange project. large dollars needed, and this is an opportunity to maybe address some of those.
Thank you. I do not have any other member questions. Representative Loon, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. I know it's a big kind of controversial idea. I know that the pool has been zealously guarded, and there's impact on all cities, some more than others, but all cities would have some of their distribution from the fiscal disparities pool, again, diverted to this transportation congestion relief purpose through the bill. But again, I think it's, I've talked to a lot of metro area city leaders about this idea. It is generally agreed that something needs to be done. And so I'm stepping forward to try to offer an idea for consideration. I think we'll have a long way to go in terms of mitigating. But I would look forward to, I haven't had a chance to meet with the city of St. Paul. My number is a little bit different than the one they quoted. My spreadsheet says $6 million, so we'll talk about that. I know it's, again, a sizable amount of money, but we would just like the opportunity to keep having the discussion.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Hornstein, it looks like you have a comment, and I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's fine. We can move on. Okay, well. The chair is saying, wow. I mean, you know, no, I just think that, you know, you're addressing some things that are really important. I mean, the 35W problem, you know, I've been involved with since I walked in here. Corridors and Commerce is fantastic. But it's kind of what Representative Nelson said earlier. I mean, we have a established, dedicated funding source that is fair and is a true user fee that we use to fund roads and bridges. And the more we try to, you know, come up with these ideas that, you know, create winners and losers and are a little bit outside of our transportation area, I think it's just going to cause more problems in other areas. And so let's just go with what we know in terms of what works. And we know that the user fee for motor fuel is a good, solid, fair way to address road and bridge problems. So, again, you've diagnosed the problem. You've done a great job of advocating for that. But I think there's better ways to fund it than this.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Representative Loon, I'll give you another chance at the last word. Hopefully this will be the last one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein. And, you know, it's the current method that we have for funding roadways is the fuel tax and that. But again, you know, I just go back to looking to what even the Met Council is saying. It wants to work with regional partners to identify additional sources of funding to fulfill their larger vision for transportation in the region. And so I'm trying to help with that mission of identifying additional resources. These are taxes already being paid. And you know, honestly, there's winners and losers in this pool and in this tax structure already. I've tried to structure it in a way that, you know, hopefully it's not falling disproportionately. It falls on cities harder that are big winners from the pool right now, but they also have a lot to gain from increasing mobility. And with the communities that the program honestly has encouraged a lot of sprawl in terms of having communities that continue to receive funds without any requirement of doing economic development to help stem that. So, you know, at some point we're going to have to figure out how we continue to get people around the metro area as the population is growing, as businesses are growing. So an idea that I know we will continue to debate in days and maybe years to come.
Thank you. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 3776 as amended be passed to taxes. All those in favor signify saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. The bill is passed. You're on your way to taxes, Representative Loon. This meeting
Thank you.
Is adjourned.